Hi, I'm Sean L. McCarthy, founding editor of The Comics Comic, found wherever you can type The Comics Comic into your electronic devices. Welcome to Last Things First, the show that asks comedians about the historic lasts and firsts in their lives as their comedy careers have blossomed, from young people's dreams to adult people living those dreams, or still dreaming. Questions both big and small are asked and answered. It's hopefully both amusing and illuminating.
Rob Hayes is a comedian from Atlanta who currently makes his living in Los Angeles, performing stand-up and writing for comedy shows on TV. Among his credits are Sherman's Showcase, the ESPY Awards, Kevin Hart's Year in Review specials for Peacock, sketch comedy for Bleacher Report, stand-up on The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon, and most recently, an appearance on the late-night CBS comedy show After Midnight. Hayes released his debut comedy album in 2019, and in March 2024, his second album, Frontin', is also available with bonus features on video via YouTube. Hayes sat down with me to talk about his path from Atlanta to New York City to L.A., and what he's learned from watching his peers along the way. There's a lot to get to, so let's get to it!
I know I need to congratulate you on Frontin', the new album and YouTube special, but last things first, what did your mom think of seeing you on After Midnight on Paramount Plus?
Oh man, she really did. She really didn't stay up. So, my mom was like, "She'll just get up in the middle of the night, watch TV and stuff." So I was banking on her being upset that I said that, and then it ended up being true.
But also, what ended up being true is you got to have the thumbnail poses. So when she did go online, she could see you front and center.
Well, there's so many of my friends, and I'm like, is this their episode? Because I don't see them in the, you know, in the thumbnail. And then, but then when I did that, I was like, well, now I'm putting pressure on myself to be good, because if I end up bombing, then and I'm the thumbnail, that might not be good.
No, you did great. I think doing a show like that, it's different from doing stand-up on Fallon or even doing panel on one of those shows, because they prepare you for all of the questions they're going to ask. And I know they do that to a certain extent on After Midnight, but it really is more of a performance vehicle for you and the other comedians to try to, like, just be on as much as you can, right?
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, as prepared as you are, they don't prepare you for everything. You know, so some stuff they do just throw at you. And also, you have no clue what the other people are going to say. And what the other people are going to do. So it's like, you know, you can kind of have a game plan in your mind, but you have to be ready to pivot, you know, whenever.
Yeah, you really have to be kind of like in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So your new special, Frontin', you went back to your hometown grounds of Atlanta to film it at the Earl, a rock club. What was it like going back there to film it?
I love rock venues. I think something about the combination of the high stage and my style, they just work well together. So when I do the road, especially in the South and places that I know kind of have comedy shows at rock venues, I love it. I love it. I mean, Atlanta is really the only place that I could, you know, fill the room. but also, I mean, I never wanted my first special to be in Atlanta, honestly. Mm-hmm. I always thought that there might be a perception of, well, he's in front of his people and it's not necessarily genuine and stuff. I think me being gone so long made me, you know, step away from that a little bit. And then also just knowing, like, you know, hopefully this isn't the only special and I have other opportunities to perform and do them in other places. And my first album was in San Francisco. So, okay. You know, I kind of got me out of my head of that a little bit. But yeah.
How does it feel, the comedy scene in Atlanta? I don't know how much time you spent when you went back, but how does it feel now down there compared to a decade ago when you were part of a pretty sizable crew that was coming out of Atlanta in 2014, 2015.
I feel like it's very different. I feel like, you know, there's definitely a lot more people, you know, it feels like there are more comics or in a more diverse crew especially like on the outside of things, which is nice. But like, yeah, I think when we were there, we all kind of felt like you had to bounce, you had to leave. And now there's kind of a back and forth. There's some people that feel like you gotta leave, and some people that feel like you don't have to leave. And so that's been interesting.
Right. I mean, the year that you did last Comic Standing 2015, Clayton English won. So, it was really kind of putting a spotlight on Atlanta. And now you've got the 85 South crew, and there's a whole bunch of people.
Yeah, that year, Montreal, me, Caleb Simon, Dulce Sloan, and Clayton were all new faces. And then, yeah, and the 85 South started like December of 15. And yeah, just all just kind of ballooned from there. And there's so many talented people that come out of Atlanta. But, part of what makes all these people so good is just all the different types of rooms and spaces, and almost like, this comedy show meaning more than just being a show. It's like, if this show isn't consistently good, people in this area won't believe in comedy. They won't believe that stand-up is a thing that they should be watching live,
Yeah, the sense of like, yeah, they're judging the entire form of comedy based on your show. That's something I don't think enough people care about or think about when they're putting on shows. And no matter if it's in Brooklyn or LA or anywhere in the country, they don't realize that there's still a lot of casual comedy fans who don't know what live comedy is until they see a show.
But you don't have to think about that in Brooklyn because there's so much comedy, like there's so
Sure.
many like comedy institutions that you kind of don't have to think about, like, oh man, if I don't do well tonight, these people might not believe in it. But if you're in Birmingham, if you're in Asheville, if you're in just somewhere where there's a smaller market, and I'm naming places with great scenes and great shows, but still it feels like, there's a convincing of people like, hey, this is something you should see live, and this is something you should not just see in the biggest venue. Like there's the other thing of like there's certain people they only see comedy when they're in an arena. And so they're like the idea of seeing comedy in a bar is small potatoes to them. It's like I don't watch a basketball game at a bar. I don't watch a hockey match at a bar. I don't watch. Why would I watch comedy at a bar?
Did you? I remember before you moved to LA when you were in New York, I remember seeing you after New Faces, but before you moved, you were co-hosting a show in just a small bar in Williamsburg. Did you feel that same sort of tension there in terms of like getting the hipster Williamsburg crowd to pay attention?
Honestly, the toughest thing was getting the club comics to do it. Yeah, like I think the getting the people on board. Now that room was set up a little weird because there was only places to sit kind of on the sides, and there wasn't a lot of middle, yeah. But Murder Crush Kill, yeah, I forgot about that show, but yeah. Yeah, the Cellar Comics and the people that were in that all the clubs, they would come and they would act like they couldn't be seen in there. And it's just like, just work on your stuff. We know what it is. It's just, you know what I'm saying? Like I don't know. I doubt that anybody who really had some jokes burning wouldn't just like in their soul wouldn't just do the jokes, but it was that was the thing where I was just like, I don't like booking those guys here because they act like it's the ultimate favor, and it's like, it's stage time.
In LA right now in 2024, is it kind of the same thing, or is it different out there in terms of people who are working on their stand-up, if they're not part of, say, the Comedy Store, the Laugh Factory, the Improv, that they will just go up anywhere and not care so much about what stage it is and just that it is a stage.
I think everybody in LA acts like they're popping. So, LA, LA's the only place where a comic will be like, "Hey, can you take me off the flyer?" And it's like, "What? What? You're on the show? Oh, okay." I don't know. I don't know. I think the club comics just kind of stay at the clubs. I don't think they do too much outside, but part of that is because they get so much work at the clubs,
Sure, that's
and
understandable.
maybe that was the same thing that I wasn't realizing when I was doing my Brooklyn show. But I think the Cellar has grown so much since then. They have so many rooms and stuff now that that's really a thing of like, hey, I'm doing a ton of paid shows over here, and you want me to go all the way over there to do something for free, you know?
Right. Yeah, right. When you were here in New York, I think the cellar was still just the one, the main room.
They
But
have Fat Black. Oh, well, they didn't have Fat Black. I
no.
guess they
Every
had
once in a
this
while they would do the Village Underground,
and the Village Underground,
but they were
yeah.
still doing jazz and blues stuff on the other nights. It wasn't
Right,
a
right,
seven, it
right.
wasn't fully four different rooms like it is now. And the stand was only one stage, and now they have three different stages. So yeah,
Right,
you can really
right.
just
Yeah,
between
they
those two
have.
clubs, you can do a ton of spots. So one of the things you talk about in your special is the idea that you didn't think you had a good story, which obviously isn't true because you do tell a pretty decent story later on. No spoilers.
Yeah, but it's a story of privilege. It's not like, it's not gonna, it's you're no one's gonna get an Oscar playing me. It's not like everyone has a story, but it's not, someone told me like it's not what you've been through, but it's how you take it. And I
Okay.
think that with me, the drama and everything comes with, me internally a little bit. But yeah, I don't, I've been fortunate. Like there's some people and they're like, after shows, they'll be like, you're really hiding something. You think we believe this boring story stuff, but there's something going on. I'm like, no, like really, I'm Theo Huxtable. I really don't have a lot going on,
Yeah, Dr. Huxtable had a lot of hidden story, but Theo not so much. Well, I guess like a pop like the psychobabble therapist might say that the fact that you don't think you have a story is your story, right? That your insecurity about not having this dramatic, tragic youth that you're overcoming and you're overcompensating for with comedy, that in turn is making you insecure and forcing you to come out of your shell in a different way.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And I think it took me a long time to get to that point. I think for a long time I thought I'm not a real comedian because I didn't have to overcome struggle to get on stage, or I didn't have to, or this, my back isn't against the wall. This is the only thing I got, and I think a lot of that comes from, the influence of gangster rap on not only, my generation, but also like the generation of comics before me. And a lot of it was like, like the reality show thing of, you hear the sad story of the insurmountable odds and this person's going through this and you gotta root for this person because of that. And, I had an idea of that in my head of like the reason that I might be hitting a wall in comedy is because I don't have that to pull from, and maybe I shouldn't be the person doing this. And me kind of owning that opened a door to me being my authentic self, I feel like. I feel like that being at that point in the special, after that, anything I say, if you choose to listen to it, you know it's coming from a person who doesn't really have much of a story, you know? So now it's like, all right, but if you are still interested, if you are still captivated, here are my funny things and also a story.
I think looking back on, I remember seeing you at New Faces in back in 2015, and I, not knowing hardly anything about you then, not that I know a ton about you now, but it felt as though you still stood out in a way by, I don't know, people called you like low key or laid back, or this idea that it actually makes you seem much more comfortable on stage as opposed to like the people who were being loud or showy or physical trying to get your attention, that you, by being like more reserved and pulled back, it actually forces the audience to like lean in and go, "Oh, what's this guy saying?"
Interesting. I just stick to my guns. I don't know. I can't help it. It's not like a fabricated thing as much as it's just like this is the most comfortable way this is just how I am, and I've been made fun of it my whole life, and so I don't know. I don't rem I remember the new faces set a little bit, but I do remember having an internal crisis there as well, just feeling, I just wanted to do well, and I wanted to, that even though I knew it wasn't the same as the 80s and stuff, I wanted it to be like, yeah, but when Rob came, he did get a holding deal. They didn't even know they had one. And I don't know. I was in my head about the whole thing. It was a chaotic experience for sure.
How long after the festival did you still hold on to that kind of chaotic thinking about where you should be in your career?
Well, I think, afterwards, everybody's getting late nights and different opportunities. And like it was 3 years between when I did New Faces and I got late night, and I felt like I was one of the last people in my class. And I would watch all the shows, I'd watch all the late nights, and I was just like, dang, that's the next step. Why am I not, on the next step? But it's a timing thing, and that time motivated me to write more and dig deeper, and I know all of the things that they look for in one of those sets, at least in my head. And so it was just like, all right, I'm going to make an undeniable set, and if I don't get it, then I know it has nothing to do with, what I create. It has nothing to do with the art. If I make a set, late night parameters, no cursing, no pop culture references, no company names, address the elephant in the room, say who I am, what I've been through. If I do all of those things in 5 minutes in front of people who don't care about that at all, they just want to see a comedy show. They don't care that, then I know, okay, I'll be ready.
Right, the audience of the Tonight Show might be there to see one of the other guests, or they might be there just to see Jimmy Fallon or The Roots, and you
Oh
happen to be
no.
on the lineup also.
I'm talking about the people in the comedy club. I'm talking
Okay.
about at the standing room, me, people they got to kind of like crick their neck to look at the show
Oh yeah,
'cause you know the
that
way it's
narrow
put,
place in Long Island
right?
City. Yeah.
And I'm going for it, but also I'm putting all the rules on myself while I'm doing it.
Okay. But like you said, it did take 3 years from New Faces for you to get Fallon. But then that year you also did Comedy Central with Adam Devine's show. And then you were back on Fallon just recently to help promote this new special. How did the second time on Fallon feel compared to the first?
The first time I was going through a loss. My father had just passed, and so it was like kind of cathartic. It was kind of therapeutic. You know, I felt like, oh, I've been through the worst thing in my life. This is nothing. You know, there's nothing that can happen here that's worse than what I just been through. He passed on the day before I found out I got it.
Oh, wow.
Like I feel like I could have been in the hospital with them, you know, I remember calling him and telling him that I auditioned and everything. And he used to be so excited about late nights, and he would record my friends on his phone and send it to me, and he'd be like, "Dad, I can see it on YouTube. Like, you really don't have to
I
do
don't need
this, you
it
know?"
as a text message.
Yeah. So, you know, I for a while was like, what if now that I, you know, don't have that, I'm gonna go up there and feel all the things that I didn't feel the first time. But it wasn't that. When you do late night, you can do a run through. At the clubs, we'll never do a run through. We never go to the club, do our set, you know, a practice round, and then come back and do it with people. So it's like, it's so much better. It's so much better. I feel like I was thinking about things that I wasn't thinking about the first time. The first time I was just thinking about crushing, you know, killing in the room. This time I'm thinking about, you know, how am I looking, you know, like, am I looking at this camera or looking at that camera? Am I looking like, you know, it's a big room? And it was great. Everybody in the hallway was like, "You've done this before. It's going to be great. It's your second time." And, you know, that made it exciting, made it fun.
And of course, I was talking earlier about, your style being more laid back and low key compared to the louder physical acts. So I have to wonder, how did you end up becoming such a frequent working partner consultant to Kevin Hart?
Honestly, just through writing for different people, making connections. You know, I joke around that, like, you know, I have to work on like maybe five Kevin Hart shows before he knows who I am. But he's a very busy man, you know. But just, I mean, really good work. Good work gets good work, you know, and just and not only being funny on the page, but being funny in the room and being funny on the fly. But yeah, he's incredible. He's an incredible person to watch work because he's so good. Like, he could see something cold one time and then make it so much better, like, instantly. You know, it's like a machine. And like, anybody who's ever done prompter and stuff knows that stuff isn't easy. And, you know, he is a beast at it. So, I mean, I've written for a lot of people who have different styles than me. Like, I got to write for Steve Harvey on a myriad of different things. And you know, some people I've watched them, they pitch to Steve Harvey in their Steve Harvey impersonation voice. I don't do that. I much rather pitch in my voice. And then if you hear something that you're like, "Oh, I think I could do that from Rob's voice," he can always put his voice on it, you know. So I, you know, like, and I don't know. I don't know if he liked it or not, because he would make fun of me. Like, it's like, you didn't put no stink on it or nothing. You just said, you know, you just said the joke. But to me, that makes more sense instead of me trying to push it, because I feel like he could see through that, you know? And, you know, but also, like, we would get the topics when I worked on his talk show. We'd get the topics, and then I would like try to come up with little zingers and stuff. And then we would go where they would present him the topics. The stuff he would riff, I'd just be crossing out stuff like, "Yep, all right, he got there. Yep, that's really funny. We don't need that." Like, you know, he's one of the funniest people I've ever been around. You know, it's so funny because I feel like I've worked for two of the most critiqued comics, especially now. And I'm like,
They're both on Cat's list. That's right.
and I feel like if people knew how insanely funny they are, like off, off camera, they would never question them. Like Steve Harvey can make anything into a joke. All he needs is to like understand like what's going on, and then he could literally make anything into a joke. It's incredible.
Well, that's why
And
so many of
like,
those Family Feud clips go viral, because
right.
he's just reacting to the situation.
And he doesn't have a lot of time. It's not a lot of anything. It's instant, you know. But
Right.
also, when the between stuff going on, when he gets on the mic, commercial breaks and stuff, the funniest, telling the craziest stories. Like, yeah.
I suppose that's quite a lot different from, say, working on the ESPY Awards, or even working on something that's like a variety show, like Sherman Showcase. Those are completely different skill sets for you, right? Trying to make athletes funny, or trying to write in a musical vein.
Yeah, I mean, I love music and I love sports, so those things make it easier. In my spare time, I'm mining, all the streamable music, and I'm watching music docs. I'm constantly taking in music information, whether it's for work or not. That was fun. Songwriting was new for me, and now my IMDb says I'm a composer, which is pretty wild. Because I'm really basic when it comes to songwriting, but we had some incredible talented people that helped us with the songs and stuff. But the ESPYs, yeah, it's a challenge. I think my favorite was writing for Steph. I feel like if there's an athlete that could tell a joke in the Rob Hayes voice, it's definitely Steph Curry. And I feel like I got the most on that ESPYs for sure.
Your joke writing style is a fadeaway three?
Well, I just he's kind of low
Right.
key. Like
No,
even
I
he's
totally get
like,
it as soon as you said, I got it.
But also, yes, and coming up in the Atlanta comedy scene, I was surrounded by dunkers. It's kind of like Steph, where it's like, if you want to be the guy, you got to be 7 foot. You gotta dunk crazy. You gotta, between the legs and be a high flyer. And I've been shooting threes the whole time, and now it feels like threes are starting to be appreciated.
Yeah, I mean, I think about Atlanta. I think, I'm not a tall guy myself, so I always looked up to Spud Webb. But threes weren't a thing for him. He was the short kid who could dunk.
Right. He's probably watching Steph like, oh man, I went about it all wrong.
It
Yeah,
was a different era. It was a different
it was
era,
a different era.
and the kids on TikTok are right
Right,
now
you
claiming
could.
that the '90s are junk.
Yeah, we done with the 90s.
You watched the '96 finals? Horrible.
It's why I love that the NBA put all the finals on their apps, thinking that just people would just watch them and not knowing they're just like feeding like anti-history content.
It
The
is kind of
Jordan
wild.
doesn't have a left-hand thing was wild. And then it's like, and then people started putting up left-handed Jordan highlights, and we didn't need that. We would have known if Jordan played 13 years no left hand, you know?
But I mean, that's the kind of wild thing about like letting a generation that didn't live through it put their eyes on it and seeing how they see it completely different from us. So, part of you putting out this special was celebrating 15 years, a comedy generation, putting that like chapter behind you. So what is the next 15 years look like for you?
The next 15 years is I think it's gonna be beautiful. I think, I think the things you learn from putting out material, you can't, you can't learn any better than that. And I feel like I'm just gonna hopefully the end of front end is what the rest of my stuff is like, more honest, more true, but also very thoughtful and intentional and jokes the whole time. I think when I explain front end to people, it doesn't sound funny because I'm saying what it's about and what it means, but but there's not a time in it where I'm not telling jokes. There's not a time where there's not a comedic payoff. It's just like, yeah, it's just more depth than you're used to from me.
Right. If there's one thing I learned is that you do have a good grip on comedy.
Oh,
Rob Hayes, thank you so much. Congrats once again on the special, and I'm really glad we could
thank
make this
you.
happen.
Thank you for having me. Yeah.
This episode of The Comics Comic Presents Last Things First was post-produced by Alex Brazell at Showbiz Studios. Theme music was by Camille Harris and Shockwave, logo by Giggle Chick. If you enjoyed listening, please check out my Substack called Piffany at piffany.substack.com for transcripts, bonus commentary, and expert analysis about comedy, show business, and more. I'm your host, Sean L. McCarthy. Thanks for listening!